Okay. So now we've got to the arguments against it. I hope I've convinced you that there is a rational alternative to burning stuff. But let's look at the arguments against incineration. It wastes valuable material resources. It wastes energy. It wastes the opportunity to really fight global warming. It is not sustainable. It is a bad financial investment, and it poses significant risks to health. So let's look at these one at a time. So waste of valuable material resources. This here is the increased value in recyclables in the US Northwest, which is very close to you. Notice it's gone from $33 a ton from 93 up to $140 a ton in this year. There is no indication that this is going to come down. This is probably the one industry that's going to benefit most as we want to run out of resources. This is where you put your money. Now, look at the second most. I've told you the first most valuable item is reusables. The second is plastics. This again, Los Angeles. The second most valuable item, polymers, plastics. And the third most valuable item is paper. And guess what we burn in incinerators? Paper and plastics. We're burning the second and third most valuable materials in the waste stream. A waste of energy. They say, oh, we build it because we can recover energy. You recover, you save four times as much energy by recycling all the materials in the waste stream instead of burning them. So they're a waste of energy, these incinerators. Let me give you an example. That green column is the energy you save when you recycle a ton of these materials in the waste stream. These are plastics here. This is the amount of energy you get if you burn those materials. And this is the ratio of how much more energy you get from recycling compared to burning. I want to draw your attention to this one. PET plastic. 26 times more energy is saved by recycling these plastic bottles. These is the soft drink bottles, PET plastic, and water bottles and so on, than burning them. It's an environmental crime to burn that stuff. It's outrageous. Okay. Now, what about global warming? Let's go back to our linear society. If you go back to that, we use a huge amount of energy extracting materials, shipping materials. At the same time, we produce a lot of solid waste, air pollution, water pollution, carbon dioxide, which contributes to global warming. Then we have more energy in transport. Then we have more energy involved in making, processing chemicals from oil and so on, and making products. And again, more solid waste, more air pollution, water pollution, carbon dioxide, and so on and so on and so on. We produce 70 times more waste here than shows up here. So every can of garbage that you see on the street, 70 cans of waste were produced upstream. Now, okay, let's look at what landfills and incinerators do to this picture. Oh, by the way, this is all the places which contribute to global warming in this scheme, with the energy use, the transport, and the manufacture, and so on. What does incineration and landfilling do here? Nothing! It's business as usual. If you bury something, you've got to go all the way back and make a new one. If you burn something, same thing. Whereas with recycling, you cut out all that extraction and transport of those materials. And if you reuse, you cut out all those impacts. So if you're really interested in fighting global warming, the way to do it is with reuse, recycling, and composting. It's a similar argument with composting. In fact, a European report shows that a combination of composting and recycling reduced global warming gases 46 times more than incineration producing electricity. 46 times better. And yet, they are selling incinerators on the basis that it reduces global warming. This by this minuscule amount over here. This is comparing with landfills here. Incineration is a poor investment. Most of your money spent on incinerators is going into really complicated machinery, whereas with the alternatives, your money is going into jobs and local businesses. In other words, your money works twice. You not only get the program but you also create lots of jobs locally. That all that money stays locally, which is great. Incineration produces toxic ashes. You have a bottom ash, which is about 90% of your product, falls through the grates. The fly ash is the fine material that you hope to capture in the air pollution control devices. You get about a ton of this for every 4 tons of trash that you burn, and that usually goes to landfill. Ash management. In Germany and Switzerland, the fly ash is put into nylon bags and placed in salt mines. In Japan, some incinerators vitrify the ash. They make it into a glass. In Denmark, beautiful, clean, green Denmark has a wonderful solution. They send it all to Norway. Okay, and then incinerators, of course, put out highly toxic substances into the air. We are most concerned about toxic metals. These are all elements. If these go into the incinerator, they're going to come out of the incinerator. They're either going to come out in the air pollution control, or they're going to come out into the air. So the toxic metals and thousands, literally thousands of new highly toxic compounds actually produced in the burning process. And now there's a development since I was talking about this 10, 15 years ago. These, now we see this special problem is these come out as nanoparticles, very fine, very tiny particles, less than 1 micron in size. Now here's, you can see the problem. We regulate particulate matter from incinerators at 10 microns. The particles that we're talking about are less than 1 micron. They're down here, they're really tiny. So we're regulating cannonballs when it's peas, pinheads that are coming out of that. So we're not regulating it and we're not monitoring it. And we're just hoping to goodness that there's going to be no consequence. Well, that's a really risky gamble. There is a brilliant paper in Environmental Health Perspectives which goes into the problem of the generation of nanoparticles. Admittedly, they talk about hazardous waste, but the same arguments apply to solid waste. June of 2006. No community should build an incinerator until they have seen a written response to this article by engineers or whatever, explaining how they're going to address the problems raised here. I think it's a showstopper. I do not think that I haven't seen a response yet. I do not think they can produce one. It's all hoping to goodness that it doesn't, that the chickens don't come home to roost. Now, what do we know? We know that you can relate health conditions, disease, both mortality and morbidity, to particulate levels in cities. The more particulates out there, the higher the respiratory problems and other diseases. And we also know that as you look at this, as the particles get smaller, that relationship gets stronger. So 10 microns, you get a relationship. 2.5 microns, a stronger relationship, and then even smaller. So now we're looking at even very small particles, these nanoparticles. Now, what has happened here that has changed since I was fighting this 10 years ago? The answer is nanotechnology. And because of nanotechnology, some people decided, well, what's the biology of nanoparticles? So we have new research areas called nanopathology, the nasty biology of nanoparticles. And here we go. Let's, in more general terms, they're not easily captured by air pollution control devices. They travel long distances. They remain suspended for long periods of time, especially in when you've got inversions. And I suspect that's a huge problem here with the sea and the mountains. And certainly the people in the Fraser Valley are very concerned about that because of this tunnel effect. And lastly, they penetrate deep into the lungs. But it's worse than that, because these particles are so tiny they can get straight through the lung membranes. There is no defense. Straight through and into the bloodstream. And once they're into the bloodstream, they go right around the body and they can cross the membranes of every tissue in the body. They can get into every tissue. And now scientists are finding these particles as they look in every tissue of the body. And they can even cross the blood-brain barrier. And here's an electron micrograph which shows a nanoparticle in the brain tissue. containing lead, barium, chromium, iron, and silicon. You don't want these toxic metals in your brain. This is a micrograph by Dr. Stefano Montanari, who I've met many times in Italy, and doing some of the leading research on this subject area. Dioxins, this is my field for 23 years. They accumulate in animal fat. In 1987, we showed that 1 liter of cow's milk would give you the same amount of dioxin as you would get if you stood next to the cow and breathed the air for 8 months. The cow is consuming the grass, the particles fall on the grass, and that's why they get so much. Now, dioxins steadily accumulate in the human body. The liver, which normally gets rid of fat-soluble toxins, doesn't work for dioxin. So they accumulate in our fat. And the man can't get rid of them. They just steadily build up over a lifetime. But the woman can get rid of dioxins. How? By having a baby. So for her, for 9 months, the dioxins which have accumulated in her fat for over 20 or 30 years are moving from her fat to the fat of the fetus. And so what you've done is effectively, dramatically increase the concentration of these materials. And to make it worse, we now know that dioxins interfere with a number of hormones which regulate fetal development, sexual development, and mental development. Whole books have been written about this. Theo Coburn's book, Our Stolen Future, how man-made chemicals are threatening our fertility, intelligence, and survival. Now, I just wanted to say this because a lot of people don't know this. If you ask somebody, what's the worst kind of toxic substance that you could have? They probably say, oh, something that kills you. And I say, no, because if a pollutant kills you outright, we would all know about it. You know, suddenly people start killing you. What's killing these people? And we would find out. The ones which are really worrying are the ones where the whole population is exposed to small levels and it causes a subtle shift in some kind of status. Now, I want to illustrate this with IQ. Supposing you have IQ, like any other human trait, is what we call normally distributed. It goes through the bell-shaped curve. Some people have very high IQ, some people have very low. Most people have the average IQ. So now we're going to shift the whole population over. We shift over by 5 IQ points. A parent would not notice the difference between 2 siblings of this 5 IQ point difference. A school teacher wouldn't notice. You wouldn't notice walking down the streets that that's happened to your population. I want you to look at what happens to the tails here. This green area represents the people that are very bright, the geniuses, over an IQ of about 170. These are very bright geniuses. Below 70, mentally handicapped. Now shift the curve over. You watching? The area under the curve, we halve the number of geniuses in our society and we double the number of mentally handicapped. This is precisely what we think happened when we had lead in gasoline. That we shifted the whole IQ of the population over by 5 IQ points and we didn't notice it was happening until it's too late. Whoops. You need 3 things to protect the public. You need strong regulations, adequate monitoring, and tough enforcement. And you have a problem in Canada. Your regulations are about as strong as Europe, but your monitoring absolutely is terrible. I mean, the monitoring of dioxin is absolutely, it borders on the criminal. And as far as enforcement is concerned, well, I think I'll leave that to you to ponder. But if any of these links are weak, you're not protected. What I'm trying to get to is you're not protected by regulations. Now let's have a quick look at plasma arc incineration. Avoid the seduction. Plasma arc incineration is part of a family of technologies, gasification, pyrolysis, plasma arc. And they have little proven commercial track record, which I will illustrate in a moment. They all claim not to be incinerators, but all involve stage 1, conversion of solids to gases, and stage 2, burning those gases. So they burn gases. They are, if you like, if they don't like the word incinerator, then they are combustors. They burn the gases. Now, if you look at the difference between mass burn, where you burn everything in a flame, and a plasma arc incinerator, The mass burn requires little external energy. The plasma arc requires a lot of energy to run the plasma arc torch. These produce a bottom ash. These produce a vitrified slag. Probably the biggest advantage of the plasma arc is that. The gas cleaning takes place after the burn in incinerators and before the burn in plasma arc. Otherwise, they're the same. They both produce fly ash, which is very toxic. They both produce air emissions. Now, the claims from these plants are highly inflated. They are pollution-free. They're zero emissions. They're proven to be safe. Zero waste. A new way to recycle. Waste is a renewable energy, not incineration. Blah, 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 blah. And your folks, some of your folks here in Vancouver are falling for this. The claims versus reality. If you go to this webpage, greenaction.org, they'll give you the sordid track record. This is Thermoselect gasification plant built in Germany. Built in 98, closed down in 2004. They were losing money and they couldn't meet the German standards. The facility has since demolished. Wollongong, Australia, I visited it. They wouldn't let me in. Built in 2001, closed in 2004. Technical problems, economic problems. The facility no longer exists. This is a plasma arc facility in Richland, Washington. The company had chronic operational problems, repeated problems, including with emissions equipment. They filed for bankruptcy. They closed in 2001. This facility in Hawaii, burning hazardous waste and medical waste, same kind of thing, listed problems and no longer operating. Now, the practical problems. The problem with these gasification technologies is scaling up from pilot projects to commercial-sized operations. I think Plasco, that's the company that's wooing your officials right now, is going to run into operational problems. There's so many things that can go wrong with these facilities. Finding purchasers for its contaminated end products is going to be difficult. What happens if they can't sell those products as they anticipate, that they think they can sell them? Now, cleaning up the gases, it sounds very easy. We're going to clean up the gases before we burn them. But please note that in a conventional incinerator, half your capital cost goes into air pollution control. It is not a simple thing to capture all the toxic metals, particularly mercury, all the acid gases, all the particulate, particularly the nanoparticles, all the dioxins. It's a formidable task. Now, the chief executive officer of this, former owner of the Ottawa Senators, Rod Brydon, popular figure in Ottawa, knows a lot of politicians. The filter ash goes, he says, the filter ash is going to go back into the furnace. I say, oh my God, does this guy really mean this? Because if you put filter ash back into the plant and it contains mercury, there's now only one place that the mercury can go, and that's up your stack. The system produces no dioxin because there's no oxygen available. Oh my goodness. The trash that goes in between all the objects is air. If you put a bottle in, it's full of air, right? There's plenty of air. You don't need much oxygen to form dioxins. So this is just absolute nonsense. It may be genuine nonsense because he's not a technologist. The system, he says, destroys nanoparticles. Absolutely no way that is a true statement. The slag to be used in asphalt and concrete. It's extraordinary that we're talking about spending millions of dollars to make roadbed. and the salt to be used on roads. This salt is going to be highly contaminated, in my view. Sulfur is going to be used in agriculture. That too has the potential to be contaminated. So they say every single thing is going to have a use for it. So it's a lot of sales hype. Now, let me. I got a letter this morning by email from Rod Muir of the Sierra Club, and it's a letter he wrote to the mayor of Ottawa. He said, Plasco is 6 to 12 months behind schedule. Very little testing has been accomplished. Operating at 10% or less of rated capacity. In other words, they're dealing with 7.5 tons a day, not 75. Sending back to the city approximately 50% of the waste that's being received. Has yet to run 24 hours continuously. and has operated for a total of just 10 days, and perhaps most importantly, has produced 1 hour of power. Now, on the basis of this superb track record, you're talking, the politicians in the Vancouver, Metro Vancouver, are talking about building, what, three of these at four times the size? I mean, okay, it may work eventually, but you better wait until you've got a little bit more information before you sink billions of dollars into this, especially coming with this track record of all these other failed facilities. Concluding remarks, Metro Vancouver. For Metro Vancouver, in my view, to invest in 3 to 6 trash incineries, including Plasco's magic machine, will prove very embarrassing. To spend a fortune converting resources into roadbed or asphalt while wasting energy and the opportunity to fight global warming is extremely short-sighted. It threatens the key imperatives of maximizing recycling, composting, which they agree with, EPR, and fighting overconsumption and bad industrial design. And it shows a huge lack of imagination when our number one task on a finite planet is to move towards sustainability. In other words, it's a heartbreak, because as Helen said, Vancouver was moving towards the zero waste challenge, was talking about EPR. In fact, in terms of EPR, thanks to Helen's inspiration, you're leading the world in this thing. And all of a sudden, some rather short-sighted but powerful people in City Hall are going to shoot yourselves in the foot and go in exactly the opposite direction that we need to do for the 21st century. That's sad. You're building 3 to 6 incinerators is also a huge waste of taxpayers' money. They say, Plasco says, oh, we will build them at our own expense. Okay? They're going to give it for free? Absolutely no. How do you pay for the incinerator? You pay for the incinerator with a tipping fee. The citizens will have to pay so much a ton, every ton that's delivered there. And that tipping fee has got to pay for the building costs, the operation costs, and their profit. And that's going to be a lot of money. They get very little money from the sale of energy, by the way. The economics is based upon tipping fee, and you pay that. We could be using that money to produce the alternatives, creating more jobs, more sustainable businesses, make a sustainable investment in higher education. Instead of building resources, buildings to destroy resources, produce buildings so that our brightest minds can study this problem and link to all the other issues in sustainability. With many other, you can link zero waste with agriculture. We need organic waste back to the soil. We need sustainable agriculture. You can link it to architecture, deconstruction of buildings. It's going to inform how you build buildings to use those materials in the future. Sustainable energy, there are many links there. With the unions, with jobs and better industrial design, community development. There's so many things can be linked to zero waste. It's such a great place to start. So that money should be going into one or more resource recovery parks coupled with an institute for zero waste and sustainability. This would cost less, would do far more for the image of Metro Vancouver, and would be far more acceptable to citizens, especially those living in the Fraser Valley, and I would say especially citizens like yourself. One of the things I noticed coming in, you've got a lot of high-rise buildings. Those high-rise buildings are going to get the plume uninterrupted. You won't have even had the, given the plume the chance to dilute and disperse before it comes to ground. You're going to get it right on those top floors. And also, I've mentioned the topography, which will trap these nanoparticles for weeks at a time. But we need good leadership. We need leaders with vision, with imagination, with perseverance, and who are not back-end thinkers. I got a little story to illustrate a back-end thinker. Here's a back-end thinker, comes home, the bathtub is overflowing, so he quickly grabs a cup, and it's not fast enough, so he gets a bucket, and it's still not fast enough, so he gets a foot pump, and it's still not fast enough, and then he gets an electric pump, and at this point, his wife comes home, and she turns off the tap. She is a front-end thinker. This is the metaphor for what we're talking about. We have to move from the back end, trying to perfect the back end of resource destruction, and move to the front end with better industrial design, better organization, and so on and so on and so on. I've talked about the videos. I just want to say a little bit more about the National Institute for Zero Waste and Sustainability. I would like to see free university tuition in exchange for 3 years of commitment to work for the country in one way or another. Well, and I'm going to suggest that to Mr. Obama, who I hope will win the election in America, because he's got millions of young people back into the system believing again, just like JFK. And you can say to those young people, we will pay for your university education, but you have to work 3 years for the country. And top of my agenda is moving America to a sustainable thing. So you get these bright, creative people moving from university, going in the institute, studying this problem, and also getting the zero waste companies to also fund this thing, because they are going to benefit from having people trained in zero waste to go into every industry and move them ahead. I think it's a very positive vision. And I hate to see it wasted. Thank you very much.